Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program on which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. Before we begin, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mittman, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zeb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mittman, Dennis Shor, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. And people frequently ask us how they can help with the Hilltop Youth, how they can donate to the Hilltop Youth. There are two ways for you to do it. One is online and one is through the regular mail. If you want to do it online, you just have to go to our Hebrew main page, which is hayamin.org. And on hayamin.org, our Hebrew main page, there's a big donate button in English on top. You go to the top and there's a donate button there. You click on the donate button and in a couple of minutes, it's very, very easy, very convenient to donate through our PayPal account. If you want to do it through the regular mail, that's also easy to do. You can send checks and money orders to JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. The checks, of course, or money orders would be made out to JTF, and you send it to JTF, P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Now let's get to our questions from our great JTFers, if we can. And we start off with Ram 770. He asks questions in Hebrew. So I'm going to quickly read it and translate it. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, and then we'll give a quick answer in English and in Hebrew. Ram writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, Hayakar, Mashlomcha, Haya Achla, Sicha Zoom, Ani Esmach, Le Sicha Zoom, Nosefet, או שיחות זום נוספות, התוכנית שלי ששיחת הזום נוספת תהיה ב-13 בינואר, לעשות את זה שוב, איך הם החברים שלי אפשר שנושא נוער הגבעות יהיה אחד הנושאים החשובים, אבל צריכים שיהיה עוד נושאים נוספים, אני רוצה בזום הבא שנדבר יותר על סירוב העלייה שלך וגם שבזום הבא יהיה חבר כנסת שמחה רוטמן ואיך הם האנשים שלי. Okay, let me start off by just saying that we had a Zoom conference in Hebrew, a conference call in Zoom in Hebrew, and about 20 people. And Ram organized this Zoom call, and Ram wants to organize another one. Ram, ani b'meyachuz be'ad ve'idot Zoom, aval anachnu chayavim lehasig mashu, anachnu chayavim lasot. Ve'noar hagevaot, hanoseh shel noar hagevaot, ze hanoseh. אם אנחנו רוצים לעשות משהו קונקרטי, אם אנחנו רוצים לעשות משהו ממשי בשטח ולא סתם לדבר, כי אנחנו לא רוצים, אני יודע שגם אתה לא רוצה רק לדבר, רק לקשקש, אתה רוצה תוצאות. ועם זה נוכל להשיג תוצאות אמיתיות שיכולות לשנות את ההיסטוריה ממש. Okay, and Ram now writes, מה דעתך? Alai Ishit. He asks, what do I think of him personally? Ram, ani marich otcha, ata Yehudi tov, ve'ani sameach sheyesh li et haschut lehakir otcha. And I told him that I appreciate him and respect him and that I'm glad that I have the privilege of knowing him. Ve'gam yesh echad chutz מג'וני שרוצה לראיין אותך, קוראים לו ניר ויינברג, יהודי טוב, הוא מתנגד לנתניהו מימין, הוא יכול לעשות לך ראיון בטוויטר, האם זה אפשרי בשם כוח משימה יהודי בחשבון הזה, מקווה נוכל לפעול יחד באהבת ישראל, רם מאיר אברהם. And Ram also has gotten me an interview, and we're going to have an interview in Hebrew on a program that's done on YouTube from someone called Johnny. He does a program and he interviews all types of interesting personalities, and he wants to interview me, and that's going to be in January. It's going to be in Hebrew. And he said there's someone else that wants to interview me, and he wants to know if I'd be available for that. And of course, my answer is going to be that naturally I want to do interviews. Ram, kamuvan, ani rotze lasot kama shiyoter ra'ayonot. Kamuvan she'ani me'unyan, kamuvan she'im nuchal la'aroch etze, im nuchal lesader davar kaze, ma tov. Ani mode lecha Ram. Thank you, Ram. And now we're going on to the next question. And all the other questions will be in English, so you don't have to worry about translations here, about waiting for me to translate. I know that most of our viewers do not speak Hebrew, so sometimes you have to wait for the translation. But it only takes a couple of minutes. I hope it's not too burdensome. And we go on now to the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks the greatest questions. And Hirvatsky writes this week, the current division of the Pentateuch into chapters is a very late medieval and non-Jewish innovation. Who exactly made this division, unquote? Well, this division was made actually by Christians in Europe, a Christian printer in Paris, and then another Christian, Dominican, someone in a Dominican Christian made divisions. So there are a number of Christian sources for this. The divisions into chapters and verses does exist in Judaism. There is a Masoretic version of this, but the divisions in the Christian divisions were ultimately accepted because the problem was that the Christians had control over the printing presses and over the printing industry and print shops. And if the Jews wanted to be able to print Bibles or wanted to be able to print the Torah and wanted to be able to do all these things, they were forced in the 15th century and other times several hundred years ago, they were forced to accept the chapter and verse divisions of the Christians. But it is not a Jewish division at all. You use the term Pentateuch, which of course is a Greek term, and I'm saying it. I'm using an English pronunciation here. Pentateuch. It's a Greek word, and so it's pronounced. I don't know exactly how it would be pronounced in Greek. I don't speak Greek, even though I had family that lived in Greece. But Pentateuch. Is like Pentagon, it's five, it means five, because it's the first five books of the Bible, the Torah. So in other words, Pentateuch is the Greek word for the Torah. Torah actually means instruction, giving instruction to people, because the Torah has the 613 commandments that the Jews have, and the seven commandments for the Gentiles. So the Torah actually means instruction, and the Torah is the first five books of the Bible. Pentateuch, because it's the first five books of the Bible, uses the word penta as five. It literally means five books. The Christians, again, because of their control of the printing industry, this was pretty much imposed on the Jewish people. They didn't want to have this situation. They would have preferred to use the Jewish division, and the Jewish chapter and verse division is much more... is actually much better and much more practical. But they did this for hundreds of years because of the Christian, as we mentioned earlier, the Christian control of the printing industry, and it was not changed. You may say, well, now the Jews have printing houses and printing presses and the ability to print. It's not like it was in Europe where the Jews were living in ghettos and were unable to do this. Because in Europe, the Jews, most Jews were forced to live in ghettos and in situations where they were unable to do mass printing and do the type of things that they wanted to do in order to be able to create prayer books and Bibles and other things. So why today, when they do have access to printing, why isn't it changed today back to the Jewish divisions of the verses and the chapters? And the answer is because after hundreds of years to change this now and to say, you know, if now if I want to say verse this and chapter that, that we got used to after hundreds of years, if we try to change it now, it would be a colossal enterprise trying to change it now, and possibly even a big mess. But we should know that the chapters and verses that we see were created by the Christians. The Jews accepted the Christian division of the chapters and verses. They didn't want to accept it, but they did accept it. And that's the division that we use to this day. Thank you, Hidovatsky. And by the way, it doesn't reflect at all on Christian belief or Christian theology. Jews do not accept under any circumstances Christian belief and Christian theology. But the division of the chapters and verses, pretty much against their will, they were forced to accept, and now as a practical matter, it's still being used. Thank you, Hidovatsky. And we now go to our good friend Yimach Shmo to Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Do you think Trump will run again in 2024? I think that he will run unless one of three things happens. One, that he dies because he's in his 70s, or that he has a serious health problem, again, because he's in his 70s, and person in his 70s, you never know. The third possibility is that something happens to him legally, that there's an indictment against him, or there's some legal problem that he faces that makes it impossible for him to run. The odds are that he will not have a health crisis or die before 2024, because both of his parents lived long lives. You know, even though he eats garbage food and doesn't live a good lifestyle, nevertheless, both of his parents, he has, as far as longevity, he has good genes. So he probably will live till 2024. The death possibility or the health possibility is improbable, but you never know. Guy in his 70s who eats junk food, you never know what can happen. The legal problem that he may have, the being indicted, that is a possibility. That could happen. But if the three things I cited, death, health, or a legal problem, does not happen, I believe that he will run. Thank you, Yimach Shmo to Islam. And now we go to our very good old friend, Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "One, discuss the following black holidays, Kwanzaa." Well, Kwanzaa is just a phony holiday that was created by a black racist and anti-Semite from Los Angeles who decided that he didn't want black people celebrating Xmas, and so he wanted to have a holiday that would be a so-called African holiday. So he decided to put together a word that sounds African or Swahili, and he decided to say this is a holiday, this is a black holiday. It's a complete joke, like everything they do. This is a joke. And Binyamin now writes, "Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King Day is a disgrace because all the presidents of the United States don't have a holiday. We have President's Day, but we don't have any holiday for a specific president. We used to have Lincoln Day. But we don't have any specific national holiday for any of the presidents of the United States or for any other white person in American history. The only person we honor with a so-called holiday is Martin Luther King, where everything has to be closed, where it's a national holiday, where none of the businesses dare to open on this holiday, Martin Luther King Day. And what are we celebrating? We're celebrating a communist, anti-Semite, phony, who was friends with racists and Jew haters and scum, and who changed America changed America in a bad way, made America a terrible country to live in, and did terrible things and was a terrible, immoral, phony fraud. That's what Martin Luther King was. And plagiarized all his life. He plagiarized, especially from Jewish sources. He loved to plagiarize. The black preachers and black, they loved to plagiarize from the Jewish Bible. They loved stealing from the Jewish Bible and Jewish writings. They always loved to do that. But anyway, Martin Luther King, and you know, he plagiarized in college. He plagiarized his whole life, Martin Luther King. He was a cheat and a liar and a phony. And we have a national holiday. We're compelled to worship Martin Luther King, the head of the person responsible for the so-called civil rights amendments. Remember, you can't make a civil right out of a moral wrong. And the next one that Binyamin asks about is Black History Month. Black History Month, as the great Yosef Ben Meir, Zichrono Livracha Alav HaShalom, used to say on the program. He was one of the co-hosts on the television program we had here in New York. As the great Yosef Ben Meir used to say, Black History, he was from a Jew from Britain, he used to say, Black History Month? I think a minute would be too much. You know, I mean, what are they going to learn about Black History Month? There is no Black History. The only history that existed with black people was when the Arabs and the whites came to Africa and enslaved them and introduced them to the Western world, and then they came and ruined cities and ruined countries where they went to. But they don't. Other than that, they don't have a history. They didn't have a written language. They don't have a history. They don't have anything. They weren't even clothed in most cases when they were discovered in the jungles of Africa. So, you know, so what they do is they steal other people's history. We were the original Jews. They were the original Jews. yeah. Anyway, and then Binyamin asked me about Juneteenth, National Independence Day, the real Independence Day. July 4th doesn't get a longer description. The official name for Juneteenth plagiarizes part of it by adding two words. They should have said black instead of national, or emancipation instead of independence. Okay, well, I agree with you. And Juneteenth is, you know, complete nonsense, another nonsense so-called holiday that they invent. Yeah. You know, all we have is holidays. Binyamin writes this. You see, the point I was making, I didn't even see that you wrote this on the bottom here. Binyamin, you beat me to the punch. You wrote what I've been trying to say. I think I did say it. Blacks are the only racial or ethnic group to get their own federal holiday, not just one, but two federal holidays. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The surrender to blacks is just unbelievable. And two, do the blacks that celebrate Juneteenth know the real history and how it only celebrates the end of slavery in the South and not the entire United States, since Delaware and Kentucky still had slaves until the 13th Amendment? Blacks know history? Do blacks know their history? What type of people embraces Islam, the religion that started slavery and the cruelest and most barbaric raping, murdering, torturing people, which is what Arab slave masters do? What, they're the ones who started slavery, and blacks want to identify with the people who made them slaves and who tortured them and who hate them. And to this day they have slaves in Saudi Arabia and Arab countries. They have black slaves serving Arab families to this day. And this is the religion they want to convert to, and this is the people they claim to be part of. The people who torture them, hate them, and enslave them. So does it sound like a people like that would understand history about the 13th Amendment and who had slavery and what states had slavery? You're kidding. Obviously not. But anyway, thank you, Binyamin. And we now move on to another good friend of ours, Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Happy birthday, Chaim." Thank you very much. "Who is David Cole, or the other name he goes by, David Stein, who was born Jewish, as a Holocaust denier? And did JDL ever have any run-ins with him?" Unquote. David Cole is an example of how many unbelievably sick Jews we have. You know, the Jews didn't have a homeland for 2,000 years. To be homeless, stateless, and persecuted, and murdered, and hated by everybody, for be a hated, persecuted, brutalized minority for 2,000 years... Yeah, you can't come out normal from that type of experience. And so a lot of Jews are nuts. And, you know, this is a sick, evil cockroach of Semitic persuasion, David Cole, Yimashmo v'zichro, who is indeed a Holocaust survivor. Then he went by the name David Stein. Then he started doing documentaries on the Holocaust to make money, even though his whole life he was a Holocaust denier. You know, just... What an unbelievable farce! You asked if he ever had any run-ins with the JDL ever had any run-ins with him. Not the real JDL. You know, I was the national chairman of the real JDL. There was a phony, fake chapter of the JDL from someone who wanted to cash in on the tremendous publicity we got in our massive campaign to free Soviet Jewry. The massive campaign that started with Morenu v'Rabbeinu Harav Mir David Kahana Zecher Tzedek v'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, with our beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, may God avenge his blood. And then I was the national chairman, and we conducted a campaign that was world famous and that got massive publicity all over the United States on the issue of Soviet Jewry. Irv Rubin wanted to cash in on that, so he created a so-called JDL in Los Angeles, but it was completely fake. And I've discussed some things that he did in the past. I don't want to go into the whole history again, but in 1998, Irv Rubin made contact with David Cole, the Holocaust denier. And David Cole promised to, and David Cole told him that he had changed his view and he was no longer a Holocaust denier, and Irv Rubin accepted it. Irv Rubin was willing to accept him and say, oh, that's wonderful that he accepted it. And Irv Rubin insisted that he had accepted it. And what an embarrassment, what a chilul Hashem. First of all, you forgive people who were going around denying the Holocaust? Over 6 million Jewish men, women, and children are murdered, and you have this piece of subhuman filth going around denying this, and a Jew going around denying something like that and playing into the hands of all the Nazis and all the beasts that did this to our people. And Irv Rubin meets with him and respects him and shakes hands with him and issues a statement saying now he's a good guy. He changed his ways. He's a good guy now. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's unbelievable. It reminds me of Uzi Zalka. Uzi Zalka was an Israeli Nazi. An Israeli, born Jewish, a Nazi, who in Hebrew did videos on YouTube, numerous videos on YouTube, praising the Holocaust and praising Hitler and the Nazis, and saying the Jews deserved it. They deserve to be murdered. 6 million Jews deserve to be murdered. And praising Hitler and the Nazis. And Itamar Ben-Gvir, who is now a member of the Knesset, and who supposedly even calls himself a Kahanist, Itamar Ben-Gvir accepted him as the administrator, as the admin on Baruch Marzel, someone that works with Itamar Ben-Gvir, on Baruch Marzel's website. Itamar Ben-Gvir refused to remove him, even after we showed Itamar Ben-Gvir, this guy's a Nazi, this guy's praising Hitler and the Nazis. You have him as your administrator on a so-called Kahanist site? So, even people who call themselves Kahanists, this is such an upside-down world, such a crazy world. These stories are, you know, you couldn't make these things up. If someone made these things up and made it into, was writing fiction and tried to write a story like this, nobody would believe it because it's unbelievable. But this is not fiction. This really happened with Itamar Ben-Gvir and the Nazi Uzi Zalka and with David Cole, the Nazi, the Jewish Nazi, who denies the Holocaust and works with Nazis. David Cole and Irv Rubin. You can't make these things up. I mean, this is all... These things really happened. Unbelievable. Thank God that JTF is here to at least... I mean, no matter what you think of us, no matter what you say about us, at least you know that we're not going to betray principles and not going to do these crazy, insane things that these self-hating Jews do. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to our other good friend from the forum and someone we know for years, Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, happy birthday. Thank you, Joe. What is your favorite part of Israel? My favorite part of Israel is Yerushalayim, Jerusalem. I love all the land of Israel. I love the land of Israel. I'm not thrilled with North Tel Aviv and Herzliya and certain, you know, these are very left-wing, there are certain very left-wing towns, very rich self-hating Jews. Those places don't thrill me, but the land that they're situated on, the land of Israel, every inch of the land of Israel is sacred and beautiful and magnificent, even though there's some evil people in certain parts of the land. But Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, the capital of Israel, the eternal capital of Israel, and the holy place where God is going to restore prophecy someday, restore Nevuah, prophecy, and where we're going to have Beit HaMikdash, the holy temple again. And we're all going to experience the most magnificent thing that we can't imagine in this body, in this world. We can't even imagine what it is to experience the presence of God and experience God communicating with us. This will be something that right now we have no understanding of this. We're completely unaware of what a magnificent experience that will be. That will be something way beyond any pleasure, any experience, any joy you've ever had in this world. And that someday will happen, but it will happen in Jerusalem, in Yerushalayim, at Beit HaMikdash, at the Holy Temple. So, that's my favorite part of Israel. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to another JTFer who's been posting great posts and great questions, Judah Katz, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, who were the Israeli Black Panthers? Jewish traitors? Oh, boy, were they Jewish traitors. First of all, taking the name Black Panthers, these were Sephardic or Mizrahi Jews who claimed that they were fighting against discrimination against the Mizrahi or Sephardic Jews. Mizrahi or Sephardic Jews are the Jews that came from Arab and Muslim countries and third world countries, like my family on my mother's side. I'm half Sephardic or half Mizrahi, or Mizrahi in Hebrew. And so they claimed they were fighting against the injustices that were done to the Sephardic or Mizrahi Jews in Israel. And there's no question that Israel has had very racist policies against our Sephardic and Mizrahi brothers and sisters. That is true. Israel had policies that were extremely racist, and the left-wing, self-hating Jews that control the Israeli media and the Supreme Court and the establishment in Israel continue to be anti-Sephardic and anti-Mizrahi racists. They are racists. They hate the Sephardim. That is all true. But the Black Panthers took this issue and another group of unbelievably sick Jews. First of all, they took the name Black Panthers to form their little protest group. The Black Panthers, they took the name after the group in America, the Black Panthers. Who were the Black Panthers in America? A vicious Nazi group of black Jew-hating beasts. The worst Jew-haters imaginable, the Black Panthers. The worst. Openly proclaiming that they were Marxist-Leninists, that they were communists, openly calling for the destruction of Israel, calling the Jews pigs. You know, they always called everybody pigs. They should know, because, well, actually, it's an insult. I won't compare them to pigs, because pigs have a higher IQ than they do. But, and pigs are not as cruel and evil as they are. But the Black Panthers, a vicious Nazi Jew-hating organization in America, and that's the name they use to protest against discrimination and racism in Israel? The Black Panthers? That's number one, that they adopt this Nazi name. And number two, they consider themselves to be Arabs. They don't think of themselves. Their response to the racism of self-hating Jews in Israel is not to be proud Jews, which is what the response should be. Every Mizrahi Jew, every Sephardic Jew, every Ashkenazi Jew should the response to people who hate parts of the Jewish people should be, we love the whole Jewish people, and we're proud to be Jews, and we're not going to let these self-hating beasts who run the Israeli government, the Israeli Supreme Court, and the Israeli army, and the Israeli institutions in Israel, we're not going to let them engage in sinat chinam, which means needless hatred among our brothers. We're not going to allow this. We're going to have a Jewish people that are going to stand up and be a light unto the nations, and a holy nation, a nation of priests. That's the proper response to Israeli, to the racism that has existed from the self-hating Jewish elites in Israel. Which, in other words, the Kahanist response, the response that Rabbi Kahana gave us. But instead, they decided to identify themselves as Arabs. They decided we're going to become Arabs, because most of them come from Arab countries, so they decided we're going to become just like the Arabs. And so they support the destruction of Israel, of the Jewish state. They support the destruction of their own people. Charlie Biton, who was the most prominent leader of the Black Panthers, joined the Communist Party. Rakach was the Communist Party in Israel. He joined the Communist Party, which is a Stalinist party in Israel of the worst self-hating Jews, Jews who identify with Stalin, who wanted to exterminate all the Jews. He wanted to murder all the Soviet Jews before he died, Baruch Hashem, in the 1950s. He had a plan to perpetrate another Holocaust against Soviet Jews. And he did murder, by the way, thousands and thousands of Soviet Jews. And his alliance that he made with Adolf Hitler in 1939, the alliance he made to chop up Poland, that started the Holocaust. He started the Holocaust together with Hitler by helping Hitler by forming an alliance with him and allowing Hitler to move into Poland and start murdering the Jews. And the Jews, after what the Soviets and the Russians did to the Jewish people, he's joining the Israeli Communist Party? The Communist Party? And calling himself an Arab? They met the Black Panthers met with the PLO terrorists in 1973, way before Oslo, met with the PLO terrorists and said that they support the goals of the PLO terrorists, support our enemies. The lowest of the low. Yimach Shmam V'Zichram Shem Rishayim Yirkav. May their names and memories be obliterated, they and all the other self-hating Jewish traitors. May the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Judah Katz. And now we go to another good friend of ours. So we have all great people asking questions today. We have the great Italian Zionist who writes, and I quote, "Hi, Chaim. I have several really close friends in the Orthodox community. When I bring up helping the Hilltop youth, they say it's a great cause, but I'm afraid they don't take the next step and expose the cause to their colleagues, their shul, etc. How can I convey the seriousness of the cause to them?" Unquote. That's a great question. Well, you should introduce them, of course, to our website and both our English main page and our videos and to these programs and to the forum. And, you know, if they agree that it's a good, if they agree it's a great cause, they should help. Let them contribute to the cause. Let them help with the cause and let them contribute and let them become active with us. That's the least they could do. That's the least they could do. I mean, these Jews are putting their lives on the line to save the Jewish people. And you have here Jews who call themselves Orthodox. The least they could do is back up and support these Jewish heroes. What they really should be doing is joining with them and also being on the front line with them. That, you know, asking them to do that, good luck. But at the very least, they should back these people up. At the very least. And of course, you should, you know, in a very nice way, urge them to do it, and, you know, in a very friendly and nice way, and hope that they'll come around and do it. And yeah, I mean, you will get credit for it on the Day of Judgment, Italian Zionists, that you tried. If you try, you spread the word about us. You let them know about our website. Let them know about our JTF.org. That's all they have to do is go to JTF.org. Let them know about the website. Let them know about the forum and the programs we do. You do that, you've done your job. As long as you try to spread the word and do the best you can, you've done your job. And you'll believe me, you'll get credit for it. And you deserve to be credited for it. And now Italian Zionist... Now we're going to have a different point of view here, Italian Zionist. We're going to have a disagreement here. Italian Zionist writes also... Also, just a comment, I can understand the confusion. There are no three gods. There is one God, and if a Christian says there are three gods, then he is not following Christianity or at least Catholicism. We believe that Jesus, the Holy Spirit, God are one. We do not worship a man any more than Jews worship a burning bush. We believe Jesus was a way that God communicated to us. I like getting into religious discussions. I'm not offended by any comments. The Catholic Church has done many bad things throughout history, but if anyone thinks that Christianity made the world worse, just think how the world would be if the Gentiles worshipped Thor, Apollo, Ares, the god of war, etc. Don't you think there would have been more violence? Definitely, is what Italian Zionist writes. Well, first of all, as to your first point, if you divide God into three, that's three gods. You can call it the Godhead. That's what the Hindus do. They have what they call a Godhead, where they have millions of gods. You know, it's not different from what the pagans did, Italian Zionists. The pagans also said that there was one God, like the Jews say, that there's one powerful God that controls the universe, but also he has helpers, and he has other manifestations, and he has other... And sometimes he becomes the God of the sun, and the God... You know, the pagans did the same thing. And Christianity does say... So again, dividing God in any way, saying there are different divisions of God, that there's any division at all there from the complete oneness and unchangeable nature of God, to do that in any way is idolatry. That is true idolatry. Also, Italian Zionists, Christians do believe that Jesus was God. And you write that here. You write, we believe that Jesus, the Holy Spirit, and God are one. That's true. The Christians do believe that. And to believe that God became a human being and was born in a woman and then came out as a little baby and then went through life and then was hanged on a cross, that happened to the God who created the universe? That's not idolatry. That's not paganism, to believe that God became a human being? Obviously, that's the worst type of paganism. And Italian Zionist, Catholicism is actually... The Catholic and Christian interpretations of Christianity are not the original Christian belief. The original Christians were all Jewish, and they were self-hating Jews because they believed that Jesus was the Messiah, which he was not. But they just believed he was a Messiah in the Jewish definition of Messiah, not that that the Messiah is God, and that he's going to come down and be crucified, and that he's going to die, and if we just believe in him, all of our sins are going to be forgiven. That is not the Jewish view at all. The Jewish view is the Messiah will be a great Jewish leader that will bring redemption, that God will help bring redemption to the world, but he will just be a human being with a mother and a father and come from a human family and just be a human being, like King David and other great Jewish leaders. That's who the Messiah is going to be. And that was the belief of the original Christians, who all, again, all of whom were Jews. That was their original belief. That was original Christianity, which, again, was still wrong because Jesus was absolutely not the Messiah at all. He betrayed the Jewish people. He supported the Romans, and he supported the enemies of his own people and betrayed the Jewish people. But the original Christians believed he was just a human Messiah at first. This was later changed into what we call Pauline Christianity. This was later changed because the Gentile world in Europe could not accept the concept of an invisible God, all-powerful, invisible, one God. They just couldn't. They had to have something that they could latch onto. They were so used to idolatry and worshiping something they could latch onto. And that's when the concept of Jesus, of God becoming a man, which is a very, very common pagan belief and pagan concept in other pagan religions, that's when that was introduced into the world. But the burning bush, you mentioned the burning bush. Nobody claims that the burning bush is part of God or part of a Godhead, God forbid. God is absolutely unchangeable and indivisible. Absolutely indivisible. Otherwise, he cannot be perfect and all-powerful. Any God that can change or have any physical manifestation, that's not a God. That's not real. Because a physical manifestation is automatically a limitation. God has no limits. There's no way to limit God in any way whatsoever. God, through his actions, can manifest himself like the burning bush or like the miracles he performs. His actions are a manifestation of God in this world, a physical manifestation, his actions. But God himself, the essence of God, can never be manifested in a physical way. Never. Anything physical is automatically limited. Any limitation on God is idolatry. So that's the difference between the Jewish view and the Christian view. And you know, you mentioned that there would be more violence in the world if we didn't have Christianity. I don't know. I know that in the name of Christianity, millions and millions of innocent men, women, and children were murdered throughout history. And that most of the mass murder in human history came from, certainly in the Western world, came from countries and individuals who identified themselves as Christians. So, you know, Germany was considered itself to be a good Christian country when they embraced Hitler. And we have 2,000 years of history in Europe of massacres and cruelty and barbarism beyond words. This is, and again, all of this was done, a lot of this was done on orders from the church. The church, the Pope and the church ordered the Crusaders to go in and do what they did. And they slaughtered Jewish men, women, and children. Tens of thousands in every crusade were massacred brutally. They would cut the babies out of the stomachs of pregnant Jewish women. They raped endless numbers of Jewish women, rampaging through Jewish towns and villages on their way to the land of Israel to supposedly liberate Israel from the Muslims. The things they did were unbelievably atrocious when they packed Jews into buildings and burned them alive. They burned Jews at the stake. The Inquisition was ordered by the Catholic Church, the so-called Holy Inquisition, where if Jews were not willing to become Catholics, they were burned alive at the stake. They were lit on fire and burned alive at the stake. Jewish men, women, and children. So, you know, and they kidnapped Jewish boys and put them in the service of the church. You know, the word castration comes from, I think his name was Castrati, the person who started castrating boys so that they could sing for the Papa, so they can sing for the Pope. And they used to kidnap Jewish boys and force them into the service of the Pope. And I don't have to tell you some of the other things that boys were forced to do in the service of the Catholic Church throughout history. And to this day, unfortunately, we have many scandals that show some of the terrible consequences. I'm sorry, Italian Zionist, but I don't see Christianity as a positive thing. Harambam, Maimonides, did say that Christianity, in the long run, that there was one positive aspect, that at least there's a mentioning of a Messiah and mentioning redemption, even though it's completely distorted. And Rambam, Maimonides, says that it's idolatry, but he says at least it got pagan Gentiles to start thinking about redemption and Messiah, and so that when the time comes, when the real Messiah comes, at least they're going to know what's being spoken about. But still, the consequences historically of Christianity have been devastating. Thank you, Italian Zionist, and thank you for spreading the word about our movement. And we now go to the great Nachas, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, 1, from Jan Karski, I don't know how to pronounce, Chuyun Sugihari, Raul Wallenberg, to Ord Wingate and others, who do you believe was the most righteous among the nations, unquote. Okay, it's a great question. By the way, I know all of these people I'm familiar with, of course, from history, because they're all very famous. Those who studied the Holocaust, they're very famous people. And all of them were righteous. We're very righteous Gentiles. Jan Karski was a Polish Gentile who warned about the Holocaust since 1940. He was running around warning people. He came to America, met with Roosevelt, and warned Roosevelt about what was being done to the Jews. And Roosevelt, of course, being a Nazi Jew hater himself, was completely unmoved by this. But Jan Karski tried to save the Jews. He went around warning, and Jewish organizations and Jewish leaders and Jewish organizations didn't do anything. And this Polish Gentile was running around trying to warn people and alert people to what was going on, whereas the Jewish organizations and Jewish leaders were trying to cover it up. American Jewish leaders, American Jewish organizations, because they didn't want to do anything to save the 6 million Jews. They were afraid that if they saved the 6 million Jews, the anti-Semites are going to say, we went into World War II just to save the Jews. They were afraid it would cause anti-Semitism. So to avoid annoying the anti-Semites, they were willing to sacrifice 6 million Jewish men, women, and children. That's the Anti-Defamation League, that's B'nai B'rith, that's UJA, that's the American Jewish Congress, that's the American Jewish Committee, that's Hadassah, that's the Zionist Organization of America. All of these organizations were part of that. All of them were part of the worst crime that was ever committed against the Jewish people. And Jan Karski, a Polish Gentile, did expose what was going on and did try to save them. And in that respect, he was different from the vast majority of Poles. The vast majority of Poles participated and gladly in handing over Jews and helping the Germans murder 6 million Jews. That's why Auschwitz and other death camps were located in Poland, because the Germans knew that the Polish people would be delighted to murder the Jews. So Jan Karski, not only was he a righteous Gentile, but he was a righteous Gentile coming from a people that was viciously anti-Semitic and that had the blood of millions of Jews on their hands. The other person you mentioned, this is a person again, Chiyun Sugihari. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right because I don't speak Japanese, obviously, but he was a Japanese diplomat in Lithuania. And he realized what was happening to the Jews. He realized they were going to be murdered. And the Jews were desperate to get out, and they couldn't get out because they couldn't meet the conditions that the Japanese and other countries were setting for allowing them to come as refugees and escape. So he decided, he ignored the orders of his superiors in Lithuania, risked his life, ignored the orders of his superiors, and issued thousands of visas to save the Jews. He broke all the rules and did everything that he had to do to save the Jews. In order to save thousands of Jews, he saved thousands of Jews with visas that he issued. He was really, really a magnificent, righteous Gentile. Ord Wingate, he was a British righteous Gentile who believed that creating a Jewish state is a religious obligation. And he did everything he could to help the Jews. even though his government and the British people were very anti-Semitic and very much against the Jews and did everything they could. They closed the door to the Jews during the Holocaust. We could have avoided the whole Holocaust. The Jews could have gone to Israel and not have been murdered. The British deliberately closed the door, slammed the doors shut so that the Jews would be trapped in Europe and murdered in the death camps. But Ord Wingate, who unfortunately died very young, I think he was 41 years old when he died, but he devoted his life, when he was in this world, he devoted his life to doing everything he could to save and the Jews. He gave them weapons, he trained them, he convinced the British at times that it's in British interest to support the Jews in this situation or in that situation. He changed aspects of British policy sometimes very persuasively because he was a great British war hero. So they listened to him, and he did everything he could to save the Jewish people. He was really also very righteous. Raoul Wallenberg, he saved the most of all. He probably saved 150,000 to 200,000 Jews. He was the Swedish diplomat who, like the Japanese diplomat we spoke about, like Sugihara, Wallenberg issued fake visas and fake passports and fake papers to huge numbers of Jews. And Wallenberg went around claiming that he's representing the Swedish government, which he was not. The Swedish government was working with Hitler. They were selling steel to Hitler, and they were supporting Hitler. And yet, he went against his own government and heroically and courageously put his life on the line to save the Jews. He threatened German Nazi leaders and said, "You're going to be hanged after the war for war crimes," and did everything he could to prevent the murder of Jews. And in the end, maybe 150,000, maybe something in the neighborhood of 150,000 Jews was saved by this great hero, Raoul Wallenberg. So I don't know how to classify. Raoul Wallenberg saved the most, but I don't know how to rate all of them. They were all magnificent people, and believe me, these great righteous Gentiles, together with righteous Jews throughout history, they're in the best place that you can possibly imagine now for eternity. And Nachas now writes, and I quote too, "Your thoughts on Uri Geller. Thanks." Uri Geller's an Israeli phony, a fraud, who claims to have magical powers. You know, he was a magician. And he went around, in Israel, he pulled this shtick, and he pulled this shtick. Yeah, our magician, fine. You know, magicians admit that they're doing tricks, that it's illusions and tricks. And yeah, that's fine if a magician wants to do that and people enjoy watching that. But he claimed that he really had these tremendous supernatural powers and still claims that. So he's just a complete phony fraud. He doesn't have any special powers. He has nothing. He knows how to perform tricks. But he certainly has no powers, and the fact that he says he has powers makes him an evil person who is trying to spread an ideology that is false and phony, and he's a fraud. Thank you very much, Nachas. And now we go to our great friend, Baltimore. It's good to see you again, Baltimore. And Baltimore writes, and I quote, "Thoughts on Joe Manchin. Thank you. Thanks," unquote. He's a politician. I know that Republicans and conservatives, so-called conservatives, are thrilled with him because he's blocking aspects of Joe Biden's program. Although he didn't, in the end, he's not blocking the whole thing. he's willing to compromise and work it out, but he's giving Joe Biden a hard time. And of course, I'm against Joe Biden's multi-trillion-dollar spending spree and all the other crazy things Biden is. I'm against all of that. I don't think government should be involved in any of that. But Joe Manchin, he comes from a state in West Virginia. He doesn't have much choice. He's a Democrat senator from West Virginia. West Virginia is a state that voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. And so, you know, he doesn't want to be identified with the National Democrat Party because he would be out in 2 seconds. You know, he would immediately lose re-election. So he does what he has to do to survive. And because the division in the Senate is 50-50, they can't afford to even lose one vote. And when he goes against them, that does block and give a hard time to Biden and to the others who are pushing their agenda. So, you know, that he does do. I don't think that I don't think he's an especially good person. I think he's just a politician. Thank you, Baltimore. And we go now to Joe Brandon, who has been asking us questions for several weeks. And Joe Brandon writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, a liberal Jewish classmate asked if she could email in two questions for you. I do not condone her views. One, my mother is a rabbi and a professor of Jewish studies at an esteemed university. Honestly, I'm sickened by everything I've seen on your website. My mother, who has a PhD, says it is clear that the original ancient Israelites, who were from Africa, were not white. They were black, if anything. Furthermore, there are a lot of aspects of African culture and idioms in the Torah. Jews of today are Europeans who converted and appropriated the culture later. Funny how you are racist against blacks. Don't you realize that Moses was black?" Unquote. Yeah, well, you know, okay, this is a sick person. We've been discussing a lot of sick Jews even before on some of the other questions. This is obviously another sick person. So now, what can I say? It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous. The blacks who are swinging on trees in the jungle are the original Jews? I mean, who would you think would create the brilliant, the magnificent Bible that is the greatest book ever written, that has the best-selling book that ever written, and the magnificent, unbelievable culture of the Jewish people, that they have such disproportionate power and influence over events and culture way beyond their numbers, way beyond any other people in history? Who would you identify that with? The Jews, the blacks in Africa, they're the type of people who would have that type of talent and ability? Or the Jews that she says are from Europe and they really converted later? I mean, who would you identify with the predictions and the prophecy of the Bible and the greatness of Jewish history? Who do you think would really be more fitting in Jewish history? I mean, it's so ridiculous, it's just laughable. Anyway, Joe Brandon now writes, and I quote, "Two, the only reason..." This is the second thing that she claims. Joe Brandon is quoting her, saying, "The only reason there is not peace in Israel-Palestine is because of wing nuts like you and Netanyahu. If Islamophobic people like you would simply give peace a chance and stop with the apartheid policies which alienate the indigenous Arab peoples, we might have peace. Not all Muslims are terrorists. In fact, my mother is frequently invited to speak at BDS events in Chicago. So clearly they don't hate all Jews. It's a small minority. Maybe if Israel elected a few Arabs instead of always straight, cisgendered white men, they may be able to see that not all Arabs are terrorists," unquote. Well, okay, this is a woman, you know, she wants to defend Arabs and blacks. I don't know what she looks like, if she looks half human, the Arabs and blacks she defends would rape her. Because that's what Arab and black men, that's what most Arab and black men do to their women, they rape them. I mean, women are always, oh, feminists. The feminazis, by the way, never dare identify the overwhelming majority rapists, even though they claim that there's so much rape. And there is a lot of rape in American society and in other countries, tremendous number, very high rate of rape. But they don't identify who the vast majority rapists are. They don't dare identify who the rapists are. In fact, when a black or a Muslim or an Arab gets caught raping, they usually defend that person, or they wouldn't dare. They back off. But if she even looks half human, she would be raped by the people she's defending, and they would rape her and murder her and cut her into little pieces. That's what Arabs and blacks do to their own women. I mean, it's just a fact of life. And that's no exaggeration. That literally is what happens in Arab society and in the black community over and over again. And, you know, but maybe she doesn't look half human. Because I've been to many rallies against them, of course, protesting against them. But you see all these rallies where you have these self-hating Jewish women. And by the way, the right-wing Jewish women, the Hilltop Youth Jewish women, are so beautiful. And the Hilltop Youth, are great-looking people. But the self-hating Jews, for some reason, most of them are so damn ugly. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You go to these rallies, left-wing Jewish rallies, the Jewish commies and other Jews who support all these crazy causes, not one person there looks human. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, maybe that's why they're so self-hating, because they're so damn ugly. Not one of them looks human. They all look like Albert Einstein or David Ben-Gurion. And I'm talking about the women. The women at these rallies look like Albert Einstein or David Ben-Gurion. And so, You know, maybe she looks like Albert Einstein or David Ben-Gurion, and so she hates herself. Thank you, Joe Brandon. And now we go to Vintage JTF, who has been watching JTF programs for many years and is very familiar with our movement. It's great to see you again, Vintage JTF. Vintage JTF writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, one, it's apparent Vice President Harris has a big issue. She cannot formulate ideas and concepts into complete and coherent sentences. She struggles mightily when challenged even slightly by the press. This deficiency was well hidden during her time in the Senate, but now it's embarrassingly on display for the world to see. Aren't politicians required at a bare minimum to at least have the gift of gab? How do you explain someone making it this far in life with what appears to be purely smoke and mirrors, unquote? Well, you know, she started out her career, Vintage JTF, in San Francisco, sleeping with the mayor of, with Willie Brown, the mayor, who was the mayor of San Francisco at the time. He was, by the way, he was in his 80s and she was in her 40s. And she went to bed with him in order to start advancing her career and get appointments and start moving into the political process. That's, she basically did this to advance her career. Now she's married to a rich, very wealthy, self-hating Jew. So you can imagine what a nightmare that would be if, God forbid, she ever becomes president. But she, you know, she's always been a complete joke. Look at the whole administration. Joe Biden is senile. He can't put a sentence together either. And she's a complete joke. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's really amazing. It really is amazing, and it shows what type of society we live. Can you imagine if she was a conservative Republican? I mean, with her single-digit IQ and her inability to achieve anything or even express any concepts, can you imagine if she was how she'd be mocked day and night if she was a conservative Republican, a white conservative Republican? Vintage JTF now asks, and I quote, Two, is it appropriate for a woman to be president of the United States? What's the Jewish view on limitations, if any, women should have on leadership roles? Unquote. Judaism, I think, has a lot of flexibility when it comes to Gentile leaders. Judaism allows the Gentiles to decide pretty much in their country what they want to do, as long as they're moral. They have to be moral. They have to follow the seven commandments that were given to Bnei Noach. And if they're moral and follow the seven commandments, Judaism gives them a lot of flexibility and allows them to make a lot of decisions on their own. So the possibility that a woman would be president of the United States, that's, the United States is a Gentile country. So I don't know that Judaism would forbid something like that. I don't think so. Anyway, thank you, Vintage JTF. And now we go to the great Ron from Israel. And Ron, he is the representative and leader of our movement in Israel. And Ron writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you list examples in both ancient and modern times when the good guys were complete underdogs but still managed to win and change history? What lessons should we learn from these heroes of the past? Thanks and God bless you, Ron. Okay, fantastic question. Let me try to deal with heroes that people are familiar with, first of all. I mean, there are many Jewish heroes, unfortunately, that we're not even familiar with, that we don't even know the history. And that's tragic. We should know the history. We have the Maccabees. That I think most Jews are familiar with the concept of the Maccabees and Chanukah, the holiday of Chanukah. The Maccabees were certainly the underdogs. They were just one family. They started out as one family rebelling against the Greek Empire. Massive Greek Empire, and the vast majority of Jews were what were called Hellenistic Jews. Hellenistic Jews means they adopted the Greek idolatrous culture. And so they were rebelling against self-hating Jewish traders, who were the vast majority of their fellow Jews, and rebelling against this massive Greek Empire that was ruling over Israel at the time. They were certainly the ultimate underdogs. And yet in the end, they stood for what was right and fought the battle courageously. And the few defeated the many, as we say in our prayers, the few defeated the many, and the righteous defeated the wicked. And, you know, they won an incredible, miraculous victory on Chanukah. That's just one example. We have the great symbolic example, of course, of David HaMelech, of King David, winning against Goliath winning against Goliath, David versus Goliath. That whole concept comes from our Bible and comes from the great experience of David. David was just was a boy, and he went against this giant Goliath, this massive, powerful giant Goliath that everybody else was afraid of, was afraid to confront. And with his slingshot, he defeated Goliath. And you know, people often say to us, Ron, you know, you're like David and Goliath. Ah, Hilltop Youth, this is like David and Goliath. You can't win. This is like David and Goliath. And, you know, I always say to them, yes, it is like David and Goliath. But if my memory serves me right, David didn't come out that badly in his battle with Goliath. Don't underestimate David, and don't overestimate Goliath. And of course, we have so many other examples in Jewish history. I could go to the example that you're very familiar with. Ron, by the way, is an expert on the Jewish revolt against the revolt of Bar Kokhba and the Jewish revolt against the Romans. Ron is literally an expert on this subject. But I could go into some of the other examples historically. But let's get more quickly to the modern examples. Halechi. Halechi ve'Ha'etzel were the two underground Jewish freedom fighting organizations. Maybe they had 1,000 members. They expelled 100,000 British soldiers, and the British are not, you know, British. They know how to fight, and they do have they had a very efficient army. They were outnumbered 100-1 by the British, not by Arabs, by the British. And their own fellow Jews were turning them in, and their own fellow Jews were against them. And they led a revolt that forced the British out of the land of Israel. I mean, that was certainly an incredible miracle and certainly an incredible lesson that we can learn. The Lehi and Etzel, those two great organizations of Jewish freedom fighters. And of course, we have the Jewish Defense League, the JDL, the Kahanists, the real Kahanists, who fought to save our brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union. Oh, if I had a dollar for every time people said to me when I was in JDL, you're going to defeat the Soviet Empire and force the Soviet Empire? This is a superpower. You're going to force them to let the Jews out? That's impossible. It could never happen. It happened. The JDL led a campaign that took an issue that was ignored, completely ignored, just like during the Holocaust. The issue of Soviet Jewry was buried and ignored, and nobody even spoke about it. It was on, if anybody ever spoke about it, it was on page 47 of the newspaper, or it was the smallest little story of no interest even in the Jewish community. There was very little interest. Nobody was doing anything to free Soviet Jews. And the JDL took that story and made it one of the leading news stories of the 70s and 80s, one of the most important news stories, and turned that issue into an issue which was harming Soviet-American relations and blocking trade for the Soviets and arms control agreements for the Soviets and wrecking Soviet-American plans to create a detente with the United States. The little JDL did all of that. We did it with bombs, and we did it with media. We knew how to contact the media when we made these bombs, and it was an unbelievable miracle what took place. If I had said to people, when we did say to people that we can save Soviet Jews, we can get millions of Jews out of the Soviet Union, 2 million Jews can be rescued from the Soviet Union. If you had said this to people in the 1960s, 1970s, they would say you were crazy. But it happened. And so we have to learn that lesson today with the heroes of today. And everyone who watches these programs and is on our forum knows who the heroes of today are. The Hilltop Youth, Noar HaGevaot. They are the heroes of our generation. They're the ones who are fighting the battle to save Israel from the insane suicidal plan to create a so-called Palestinian state in the heartland of biblical Israel, which is being created right now on the ground. They're building an average of seven new illegal structures every day, the PLO terrorists. Every day, with funding from the European Union, from the UN, from the Arab Gulf states, from all types of sources. Unbelievable what's going on. There will be a PLO state if the Hilltop Youth don't succeed, God forbid. And there will not be a PLO state if the Hilltop youth do succeed. If we build up these Hilltop communities and back these people and fight for them and make sure they can rebuild when somebody, when the Israeli government and police come to destroy their Hilltop communities, if we help them build and build roads for them and houses for them and put them on all the strategic hilltops that block a contiguous PLO state, if they win that battle, we will save Israel from an unbelievable catastrophe. That's the lesson that we should be learning now. Thank you so much, Ron, for everything that you do. And Ron is a real Jewish hero, by the way. And now we go to the great Mishmat. Oh, it's so good to see you, Mishmat. It's great to see you. Mishmat writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, happy belated birthday. Thank you, Mishmat. And Mishmat now writes, one, may you provide a proper eulogy for Desmond Tutu, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Well, I saw on the forum already, somebody already beat me to the punch that Yosef Ben, the great Yosef Ben Meir, Zichrono Livracha, Alav HaShalom, who used to do the program with me, unfortunately he passed away. He was in his late 70s, he passed away. He made Aliyah, he was in Israel, and unfortunately he's not with us anymore. But when he used to do programs with me here in the United States, he used to say, Desmond Tutu should be Desmond 4-4. And why Desmond 4-4? Because when you cut him in half, he becomes 4-4. Anyway, that was Yosef Ben Meir. That was his... and he would always say with the British accent. It sounded very appropriate and very, very, very official and very appropriate when he would make these observations with a British accent, since he was a Jew from London. Anyway, Desmond Tutu was a vicious, evil, nasty black Nazi Jew hater. Even though the Jews were the whites in South Africa, of course, as usual, the Jews were the whites who fought to end apartheid and who were the one group of whites that were helping the blacks in their campaign to end apartheid. But of course, always ungrateful, always filled with hatred, and that's what Desmond Tutu was all about. And now Mishmat, and call for the destruction of Israel. By the way, Desmond Tutu met with Arafat, call for the destruction of Israel, just the lowest filth. Him and Nelson Mandela, that other black Nazi piece of subhuman sewage. You know, all of them, they're just always the same story. The tragedy is Jews never learn from all of this. Mishmat now writes, too, also, please elaborate on why South Africa was better under apartheid's rule, especially as it pertains to Israel. May God bless you and your loved ones. You're truly a gentleman and a scholar. Kol Tuv. Thank you very much, Mishmat. And yes, South Africa was definitely better for Israel under apartheid. South Africa was an ally of Israel under apartheid. South Africa was trading with Israel, and there were boycotts against Israel and boycotts against South Africa. The two countries traded together. And South Africa, white South Africa, the whites in South Africa actually were very prosperous because Africa has tremendous natural resources. Africa should be the richest continent in the world. Tremendous natural resources, tremendous things that God gave the country. But people who are swinging from trees and all murdering each other and infecting each other with AIDS and all the other things that happen in Africa, all the nightmarish things that happen in that country, and now they've created the latest variant also for the coronavirus. That also comes from South Africa now. I mean, people who just live like primitive barbarians and savages can never exploit all of these natural resources. That's the tragedy. But anyway, South Africa was better as it pertains to Israel under apartheid rule. That's a fact. And now it's an anti-Semitic country, and just like all the black African countries, a lot of them got tremendous aid from Israel. Israel helped them. And they immediately stabbed Israel in the back and announced that they support the Arabs against Israel. So, what else? You know what the Yiddish Jews, when the Yiddish is now a dead language, but the Yiddish Jews used to say, so what else is new? Thank you, Mishmat. And we go now to our friend Am Raphael, who writes, and I quote, happy birthday, Chaim. Thank you. What do you think about the danger of the Israeli proposal to be more lenient to Arabs at the airport so that Israel can enter the visa waiver program to the U.S.? Any advancement with... Oh, and then there's a second question after that. Okay. I don't think Arabs should be allowed at the airport in Israel. I don't think Arabs should be allowed into Israel. The Arabs have declared war on Israel for 150 years now to destroy Israel and to destroy the Jew, even before we had a Jewish state. Before 1948, before we had a Jewish state, the Arabs were working to exterminate the Jewish community there. They supported Hitler during the Holocaust. And we allow them to come into Israel. I'm not allowed at the airport in Israel. I was arrested and sent back to the United States as soon as I tried to make Aliyah 25 years ago. But all the Arab enemies of Israel are allowed in. Of course, they shouldn't be allowed there at all. And the Jews are so anxious to have the visa waiver program, the U.S. Why? Because they want to be able to get green cards and visas and come to America. All these self-hating Jews, they can't wait to get out of Israel and come to America. You know, and the Israeli government wants to help them. You got to help them. You got to help the Jews. So in other words, we help the Jews leave Israel and help the Arabs come to Israel. So we'll have more Arabs and fewer Jews in Israel. Doesn't that sound like a great program that the Israeli government comes up with? Everything in Israel that the Erev Rav, that the mixed multitude that controls Israel, everything the Erev Rav comes up with, that these traitors come up with, is upside down, is the opposite of what's good for Israel. Everything they do is the opposite. And now Amraphael writes, and I quote, "Any advancement with Simcha Rotman so you can make Aliyah," unquote. No, I don't have anything to report on that right now. I did try with a different member of the Knesset last year, and it failed. He really tried to help me, but unfortunately we didn't succeed. If I make another application now, last year they rejected me for the seventh or eighth time in the past 25 years. I can make another application, but I think it's going to be rejected again if I keep applying. I don't know. Right now, we'll see. We'll see what happens. And Simcha Rotman, by the way, is not part of the government coalition. He's part of the opposition in Israel, so he doesn't have the power to get me into Israel, unfortunately. Last year I had an Israeli Knesset member who was part of the government coalition, who had more power to get me in, and still it didn't work, and he really tried. Thank you, Amraphael, and thank you everyone for another program of JTF. We're giving people an opportunity here to do something no other Jewish organization in America gives them, an opportunity to actually really change things. Because if we support the Hilltop Youth, we're actually building things and changing things and building roads and buying tractors and building and constructing and doing other things. We're doing things that no one else is doing. This is not a bluff. All the other organizations are all a bluff. All of them are a bluff. This is the one group that's not a bluff. And it's the one group that gets the least support out of all these big Jewish organizations that raise so much money for so much nonsense, and in many cases for things that are so harmful. The world is upside down. The Jewish world is upside down. That's why JTF is here, because somebody has to explain to the world what it could be like if we acted like normal, sane, good Jews for a change, and good righteous Gentiles. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.